Welcome, everyone, to episode 71 of the Three Drinks In podcast. There's no guest this time. We are discussing that big hashtag that was going around, the seven favorite movies on Twitter. I mean, it was timely at the time, but now it's a bit dated, as Twitter usually is. And this time we're doing the seven movies we'd like to share with future generations, maybe our own kids. I know Vince just had a kid. As far as I know, I don't have any kids, which is fine with me. And we tried to narrow it down to movies we think would still hold up and still really, blow the kids' minds someday, make them think a little bit. And it's a little long. We actually got into some of these things, and we had a good time with it. So if you guys would like to share yours, you can always find us on Twitter, Facebook, at the website, threedrinksinpodcast.com. And give us a little rating on iTunes. Maybe share us on your social media sites. Get the word out. The more people that we have in the conversation, the better conversations we usually get. So, go ahead and do that. And in the meantime, sit back, relax, and enjoy the podcast. Hit it, boys.
Had some runners up. Oh, no, I had some runners up, and then you.
I think I know my own life, Marge.
I'm me.
Okay, I'm me. You're you.
I said that in a meeting at work the other day, and it got a laugh because, it was one of those things where people were talking and pronouns are going back and forth for a few seconds, and I went, "Well, hang on, no, I'm me." And it was funny, but I'm like, that'd be 10 times funnier with the right audience.
Yeah, that's well, you people watched old episodes of The Simpsons.
We're really big James Woods fans.
Yeah, all 10 of them.
So, all right. So I had my seven, and I'm confident about six of them. And then I have this seventh slot, and then there are, I filled it, but then there were four movies that are hanging out there.
Don't do some bullshit where you rotate things in.
Well, I mean, the first six are kind of oh, yeah, okay, right, sure. Yeah, okay. You kind of, it just makes perfect sense. And, I mean, I guess to preface this for the audience, I mean, this was a thing on Twitter. Apparently, now, 19 years ago in Twitter time.
Yeah, you're way behind
because
now.
Twitter time is literally, I think Chris Hardwick's, metaphor, which you mentioned last time, is really apt to say that you just bolted something to the hood of your car and drove through town at 90 miles an hour, and then afterward it went, wait, you didn't see that?
Yeah, and if you didn't see it, well, it's gone forever.
Yeah, and you're never going to get it back. It's just, which is why I don't really do Twitter. I learned about Twitter fourth hand. Oh, did you hear that thing about Twitter? I went, oh, no, and then you tell me, and then now I know it.
Yeah, well, I had more time on my hands, so I try to follow it, but I don't go back like I used to. Because now I work during the day, so it's I don't have time to go back and watch 7 hours of Twitter feed, so it's well, they're not going to retweet it, I'm out of here.
Well, occasionally I'll put it on, the computer, and then as I'm sitting there, it just kind of, the counter of, things that are happening, but not feed, I guess I have to manually hit the button.
Yeah, you got to hit it.
It goes up, and I'm I can't, at least with Facebook, there's a, that's pretty old school now, but I can refresh and I get 10 new things, and then I can kind of go through, and then I can, but there's always that sort of thing counting up on the top of the screen going, you're missing important things.
Yeah.
Quick click here and you'll see what everyone's saying.
I got home from the debates and I think I had 700 tweets waiting, queued, and I clicked it, my computer nearly crashed. It's oh yeah, the debates tonight. That's right.
Yeah. No, I don't. I much prefer the Instagram, which is why the day we went to the convention, all of our posts were Instagram posts.
Yeah.
And I just
simple
sent them over to Twitter in case you were really curious. But it's, even though they can't make money on it anymore, they're definitely, it's a ubiquitous form of getting everything. I mean, the questions about, it's been 17 hours since Donald Trump has last tweeted was news.
Yeah.
Not, it was the absence of tweets that was news. So,
my God, he might be dead. Or they're recharging the robot. I don't know.
or the mafia finally came and took his thumbs.
Yeah. He's texting with his nose now.
It's like that bird on the desk with the water.
Yeah. Why does it keep typing N the whole time?
They can't get him to stop tweeting. It's amazing. He's a trooper. Making America great again.
Yeah, sure. He's doing something.
Yeah. Anyway, so... Right, so it was the seven favorite films, and it caused some controversy because people were actually just following it literally and putting their seven favorite films. And everyone's just like, what? Weekend at Bernie's? And it's just like, no, it's not a good movie. I just happened to like it. It was the basic... Yeah, that's why it caused some controversy, was that everyone was putting things, and it was...
People were too honest.
Well, right. They were confusing it with this whole, like, the best movie has ever made thing. Which we could be, you know, we could go on about forever. By the way, did you see the Rolling Stone put out the top 100 TV shows of all time?
Yes, I saw that. Not so terrible.
I didn't actually read the list. I know that The Wire, Breaking Bad, and The Sopranos were like in the top three. They were in the top three. I think The Sopranos was number one.
The Sopranos was one, Wire was two, Breaking Bad was three. And then I think it was like, you know, Mad Men. The Simpsons was five or six.
Yeah.
There were a few in there that I was like, really, guys? Like, Orange is the New Black is one of the best shows of all time. Why isn't Frasier on there?
Seriously.
But most of them were pretty good. You know, they had Sesame Street. They had The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and Sid Caesar's Show and stuff like that.
The Show of Shows?
The Show of Shows was on there.
Stupid name.
Yeah, you know. Well, you could get away with it when there's only three channels.
I was going to say.
And they all stopped at 9 o'clock.
Call it whatever you want. Didn't matter.
You just watch, you know, footage of American flags waving after that.
Anyway, so the seven favorite films thing, it then kind of morphed and it took different turns. And it was all about, you know, seven favorite films directed by women or like all kinds of crap. And so I saw this at the same time that I was... reading the Chuck Klosterman book, But What If We're Wrong? And I think I mentioned this last time. And he was talking about like how the stuff that we think of as being prescient and important and, you know, classic now is probably not going to be in 300 years. And that's, and I was like, yeah, that's probably true. But then I was like, well, it may not even be that long. It might even be, you know, one generation. So my son is now 4 months old. And I've heard of people sitting down with their kids to watch movies that they grew up with and being really disappointed when their kids were like, yeah, it's okay. Or like, this is stupid or that kind of stuff. And so I was like, well, what am I going to watch with my son? Because, you know, there was a few things that I watched with dad when I was like, you know, that were kind of, those were moments where I was like, oh, this is an important film. And I, you know, I could begin to recognize the distinction between the schlock that I enjoyed as a 14-year-old and a really quality movie. You know, like, and like the first instance of that I recall was watching The Raiders of the Lost Ark. Mm-hmm. And I got to stay up late to finish it because it was on TV. And the movie is really long. People forget, like, that's like a 2.5-hour film. Back when they didn't really make a lot of action films that were that long. It tended to be a little bit shorter. Like now, it's sort of like, you know, if you don't turn it in at 2:20, then you haven't done your job. But yeah, so I just got to think of like, what am I going to show him, and is it going to hold up, you know, in 14, 15 years? And I don't really know. So
I'm going to say probably not.
Well,
educated guess.
I mean, you hope that most of them will. That like you can kind of. You can kind of assume that there's a reasonable degree of success in that, yeah, you'll pick movies that are going to be important in 14 years, which would be, you know, maybe 50 years since they were made. So, yeah. And it all, you know, it's because the idea is you want to choose films, because like I can't pick everything, you know, and say, okay, this is good because I like it. Well, yeah, it's got to be good because I like it, but I have to like it because it has a thing that's a bit more universal. You know, kind of like how Shakespeare endures. These films have to have something about them that endure. And, you know, especially get past some of the limitations of the craft back in the 60s and 70s and 80s and whenever they were made. You know, because, you know, by the time he's watching TV, and it'll all be, you know, just beamed into glasses he wears on his head or whatever.
Ah, cool.
I know. I was excited. But
yeah, I mean, things have a very short shelf life nowadays, too. So, you know, stuff that, like, our parents used to watch, they didn't really see it for 30, 40 years at a time. Like, oh, my God, now it's on Turner Classic Movies. Let's watch. It's like, haven't you seen this before? Yeah, but you and I have got HBO and all this stuff. We see things just constantly beaming down, and then you just start all over again. Mm. You don't even have to rewind. So,
you know. Speaking of things I'm going to have to explain.
Yeah. Why is this Be Kind Rewind sticker on there? Oh. Sit down, my son. I will tell you a tale.
I came across
and they were called late fees. And we banished them forever.
I came across something like that recently where I was like, I'm going to have to, because it's something that was like part of my vernacular.
Oh,
that
yeah.
I've just, it might have been just taping.
Tape? Yeah, well, I still say taping.
Yeah.
I'll just tape it.
I've kind of gotten out of the habit, and I do say record it a lot now. But yeah, things like, you know, the kids who look at computer screens and they see all the images and they go, what is, like, the save icon is still, yeah.
They haven't, floppy disk.
They haven't come up with anything to replace the save icon. Most other things they have, like, the, you know, like when you used to wait for things, your computer would show you a little hourglass.
Yeah.
And then like a wristwatch. And for some reason, the wristwatch didn't catch on with Mac. And then it just became a circle that spins,
yeah.
You know, of some design. But they're hanging on to that save icon, even though they don't know just, what it
just
means.
A discolored square. It's easier to look to program. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know what else to do visually to indicate that this is going to preserve this particular thing.
Like a thumb drive? I mean, what would you put there?
I mean, in reality, what's happening is there's something getting rid of the button altogether. Like with Google Docs, you don't actually ever hit the save button. It's
no, there isn't one. It drives me nuts.
I actually, like, once you know, let it go and just kind of go, oh, I can just stop typing, and it's, which is actually what, you know, Microsoft Word used to do years ago.
Well, it does it now too. Word, it'll save every few seconds.
But then, where's that file? You have to find that file. It's like some temp file buried with like the half faded out icon.
Yeah, no, it's still on there. I've been working in a school now, and they use Google Docs for everything, and so it's just easier to use it. But at the same time, it's not as good a program as Word.
It just, oh, Lord,
it
no.
just isn't. And I'm sitting here like, oh, God, these features are just not as intuitive. Because Google Docs is all about, you know, isn't it great? You don't have to worry about saving anything? And yeah, it is. That is great. But I also need the program to do certain things. So,
yeah, no. You know,
whatever.
I mean, they figured out that...
I don't know what they're going to use for a save button.
Yeah, we have Veeredo, of course. You know.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but yeah, so the goal was to, you know, in my head, try to find movies that, A, I enjoyed, and B, would resonate throughout the years. And you also want to have some stuff in there that maybe is a bit, like, you know, like a B-side. You know, like, you know, when you tell me name like the greatest Beatles songs of all time, everyone's going to have, you know, the kind of the old classics. But then you kind of sneak in a B-side here and there to go, oh, yeah, it is a good song kind of thing.
Yeah, so. I mean, none of mine are exactly my favorite films. They're films I love, but they're also not like, if I was stuck on a desert island, is that the one I want with me all the time? No, I have some that are more personal to me.
Yeah.
Well, they won't stand the test of time or anything, but.
And we had done a podcast a long time ago now, where it was like the films that we enjoyed, even though that they weren't that good.
Yeah, what was it, like films we hate to love, or something
yeah,
like that.
I think, like the Patriot. The Patriot was one of yours.
I love that movie.
I had Contact.
Oh yeah, Contact. Like those are never going to stand up or anything. Even you watch it now, you're like, ooh, this is not good.
Yeah.
Rewind so we can watch from the beginning. What the fuck is a rewind?
Yeah, seriously. But anyway, so I'll go first and then we'll just kind of rattle them off.
So I just had a question. Are these movies that your son has to watch at an appropriate age?
Yeah, you know, not all of them are going
to
be
kids' movie. He has to see it as a kid.
Well, see, that's the thing I had mentioned. Well, we'll get. Yeah, they're really age specific. Although the more I look at it, there's not a whole huge age range in there.
Mm-hmm.
They're all sort of like mostly adult films.
Okay.
But so you figure, you know, some of them you start. You know, you can do it in like the very early teens, 14, 15, and other ones probably should wait till later, you know, kind of high school. So this is more like high school Frank would be watching.
Okay.
Some of these movies. So The Godfather.
Right.
Everyone probably should see The Godfather.
Are we all okay on board? We're all on board with this one? The Godfather? Not yeah. The Godfather 2?
No, not The Godfather part 2.
Part 2 is that good.
No. I like it. It's a fine film. But it's not necessary.
Right.
You know.
So that was always my problem with The Godfather Part 2. In the first Godfather, it's about the man and his sons, and eventually it really becomes about how his son, he wants a better life for his son, and his son turns out to be even more ruthless than he ever was.
Right.
You know, oh, we're going to go legit. I want you guys to be real citizens and senators. And so, oh, I will, Pop. And then it turns out he has everyone murdered at his nephew's baptism.
Yeah.
You know, like he waits till his father dies, the godfather dies, and then he has everyone brutally killed on the streets. It's an amazing transformational movie of, you know, the country was changing after World War II and the people were changing and the culture. Part two is just more of the same thing. Michael's a bad guy. He killed his own brother, blah, blah, blah. This is the same thing. I already know he's a bad guy.
And it's actually, yeah, he doesn't, you know, the first one has that very, you know, sort of standard protagonist different at the end than at the beginning. Which you really want in all these films. The second one doesn't have that. He's the same guy. He's a bit more of a jerk at the end of the second one because of the relationship with his family, with his wife, and with his kids. But it's also confusing.
Oh, I was very confused.
It's like I still go back and I watch it and I go, how did he? Like he was trying to figure out who was telling the Jewish guy, and it was Fredo, and he knew that because he overheard him say something in the club with the talking, and then they're in Cuba, and I'm just like, why were you suspecting him? Like, I'm sure it's not that complicated. I've just missed something all these years, but it's not that straightforward, and there's nothing confusing about The Godfather. Like, it's not a simple film, but it's not complex enough that I went, I don't get why they're doing this. Like, everything was very clear.
And even when you didn't know people's names, you knew their faces because they were such great personalities.
Yeah.
Like they were talking about people in Godfather Part 2. I'm like, who are they talking about? And then he would come on screen. I'm like, who is this guy? Yeah. He's had three lines so far. I don't know this person.
New guys that didn't have names. And like, yeah, no, there was. Anyway, so yeah, The Godfather, but not The Godfather, and certainly not The Godfather Part 3.
Oh, no. Let's not say things we can't take back.
Seriously.
Yeah, no, nobody likes that movie. That movie's terrible.
No. Nah. But, yeah, so that one, pretty standard one. After that, we have Jaws.
Oh, Jaws. Which, I don't have that one. I don't have that one.
See, Jaws to me is almost a perfect movie in its construction and its writing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a very clean, you know, everyone's got their own parts to play, and it's got very clear act structure, and, you know, it's absolutely terrifying without being even remotely disgusting, you know, and that's hard to do, in that you can't, like, you know, most things that are really scary also have to be kind of gross, and this movie is just pure suspense. It's the, you know, redefined.
So special effects didn't work.
Right, yeah. And it ends up being a fun story about how, like, well, the reason they did this, son, is because they dropped the thing in the salt water and it dissolved.
Yeah. You could, the documentary is probably just as good as the movie.
I love that documentary. I think that was just like the E documentary. Like it wasn't. Like,
yeah.
And it was fantastic. And yeah, it was one of those films that has this great backstory in that no one thought it was going to be any good and everyone was betting against it. And it ended up redefining what film was in terms of the business model. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, everyone thinks it was Star Wars and it wasn't. It was actually Jaws. Because Jaws was the first film to come out in wide release. Mm-hmm. Whereas most films came out, you know, they did everything by word of mouth back then because advertising is expensive.
It is.
Yeah. So they would open in like a couple of theaters and then there'd be like whisperings. Oh, did you hear about this Jaws movie? But no, they opened it up like, you know, 1,500 screens and everyone thought they were insane. That was also, we have to print that many copies of the film back then. It was very expensive. Mm-hmm. And they took a huge risk on it and paid off. Say at least. So, yeah, Jaws.
Jaws. Yeah, you can't. It's hard to find fault with Jaws.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty basic. Yeah.
The acting is good. The writing is good. The writing is so good that the writer wrote himself into the movie and then wrote himself out of the movie.
Yeah.
Because he was like, this is better with me not in it. So I'm going to. And which is amazing when you think about it.
Well, if you've ever read the book, it's very different.
Oh, the book is unfilmable. Yeah,
and what they did, the change—that's one of those times when like the movie is better than the book.
Yeah, it's most of the. I'm sorry. I got it backwards.
No, the movie is better.
Movie's better than, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, like Jaws and Lord of the Rings, and I think the Bourne movie.
Yeah, like anything with Tom Clancy. The movies are definitely better than the books.
Unless you enjoy reading a lot about, you know, naval ship schematics.
Yeah. This is how a torpedo works when it's not moving, just sitting in the bay. There's a whole other chapter about what happens when they're launched.
Which is a lot like, you know, Moby Dick, where it's just like, you know, an entire 200 pages devoted to, you know, knots.
Yeah. There's a whole chapter about whales that's like, it's not even accurate. You know?
And
like,
oh, hey, at the time.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't know any better then. They just stuck giant swords into them. You know? It was like 100 pages. I'm like, this is so ridiculous.
Yeah. So Jaws is up there. Raiders of the Lost Ark, like I said, it's sort of kind of the masculine film, I would think. Mm-hmm. As far as, and it's just, you know, it's
pretty violent.
Very violent, but, you know, it's never too much blood. Till the end, when there's nothing but blood.
Yeah, when their heads explode.
You know, and even then it looks kind of goofy, you know. It's scary, but it's like not like...
I feel like you got to watch that when you're like 12 or 13.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So The Godfather, you got to be a little bit older to understand some of what's going on. Jaws, because it's so scary, you know, maybe like 13, 14. But then again, it's still not like inappropriate scary. It's just tense. Raiders, yeah, you can do Raiders at 12, and mm-hmm. You know you're not quite too jaded, you know.
Yeah, no, I think you need that formative experience where you're just like, what is this?
Yeah,
there's no computers in it, you know. It's very, you watch a guy get punched in the face 100 times, nothing happens to him.
Yeah.
It's pretty pulpy. But you have to watch it when you're young and be like, this is real. This could really happen.
And it's also smart. Like, you can see him. Like, my favorite scene in Raiders is the opening scene. I mean, the rest of the movie is great, but nothing gets you into it like that opening scene, which is very James Bond-like, just to have, like, a kind of non sequitur, but does tremendous character work with almost no dialogue at all. You know, and, yeah. Like, when he's, you know, he gets up to that statue and he's looking at it, and he's got this bag of sand, and he doesn't say anything, but you can see, oh, he's measuring how much sand, he's trying to figure out how much this weighs. So he conveys a lot of thought and a lot of calculation without a whole lot of dialogue. Mm-hmm. And
Alfred Molina gets hit in the face with spikes.
He's great in that movie.
That scared me.
Yeah, that's what's great is it has like those moments where it's like, holy, you know, you were not expecting that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
it's definitely like it was definitely violent when I watched it. Like, oh my God, that thing is going through his throat.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a dummy. It's not really him, but
Well, no, they didn't kill Alfred Molina in 1980 to make this film. Surprisingly, few actors volunteered to be killed in the course of their movies.
Very few animators. It's a terrible strain on the animator's wrist.
So that one, yeah. And that one has a lot of, you know, personal significance, as that was like a me and dad moment kind of thing. I remember, like, they were having a promotion for it. I don't know what the connection between McDonald's and Paramount was.
I remember that.
But if you bought a value meal, you got one of the movies for free.
Yeah, they gave you the VHS.
And I remember they asked me, well, which one do you want? I said, well, I want Raiders. And my dad's like, are you sure? We just watched that. And that was back when, like, you didn't watch a movie twice. You know, like you said, it came along 10 years later on Turner Classic Movies, and then you enjoyed it then. But like,
it's like, you want to watch it again? Why? We saw it. What a weird concept that is.
Yeah. It's almost like I knew one day I'd have an entire podcast where we'd be talking about movies we'd seen 400 times.
Yeah.
I was an insightful child.
We were very smart. We knew this would be coming along. So.
Yeah. All right. And then we take a big leap and we do Silence of the Lambs.
Really? Silence of the Lambs?
Silence of the Lambs. I love the Silence of the Lambs. I watch it every year on Halloween.
And that's something you think your son should watch?
Not like next week.
Oh, well, no, I figured.
Yeah, but, you know, because they make so many really disgusting, pulpy horror films now. Like, I just saw a commercial for another Purge movie.
Oh, what is this, 9? 10?
I can't keep
How
track.
How many purges do we have?
Is there anyone left at this point? Means to get out of and like to rid oneself of. And at this point, you've done it so many times. What the hell? Like the first time, I guess, was kind of interesting. Like the purge, where like, I mean, it makes no sense.
Well, that's what I thought was interesting was that it had a different premise than other things.
Oh yeah. Kind of socio-political premise where it's like, you know, humanity is just, we're all bottled up with rage and we need one night just to get it out of our systems and everything is fine.
Yeah, like, okay, that's new. Never heard of that before. Yeah.
It's insane.
Let's make six of them. Yeah, no, it's insane. It's a horror movie. It don't have to make sense.
Yeah, but, and Ethan Hawke needed the work, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but like, the great thing about Silence of the Lambs, I think, is that the main villain, like, you kind of think that the villain is supposed to be Hannibal Lecter, and it's not. Like, I remember, like, learning about the movie as, like, a teenager, and, you know, I always thought that it was, like, you know, him versus her, and, you know, but then I watched it, like, no, wait, no, this is not that at all. He's already captured.
Yeah, he's in jail.
They have him already. And it just... It's set up like an adversarial type of film, and it's sort of not at all. And it's simply, you know, it's a murder mystery kind of thing where they have all these, you know, bodies of girls from a serial killer, and they're using him to get the whole... And that was extraordinarily unique to me, which is an odd phrase to use, extraordinarily unique. But it was really different than what I thought, and just the relationship between the two. And Anthony Hopkins is the greatest actor in the world, and he's scary, sort of by accident. Mm-hmm. Like I remember he was interviewed about the role years ago, and they asked him, well, how did you come up with the whole thing? And he just kind of thought about who the character was and the backstory. And he's like, well, it just seemed to me that the most natural thing for him to do when she arrives at the cell is just to say good morning. And that's what he does. And it's really creepy. Like, all he does is just say good morning in this very pleasant sort of straightforward way. And no, it was terrifying. It really was. And it's like, that to me is really scary. And it's kind of gross. And it's a very adult film, to be sure. But... So this is like, you know, 17-year-old Frank will get to watch this one. You know, can finally join mommy and daddy and, you know, their annual Silence of the Lambs viewing.
Yeah.
But, it's just the writing is good. The direction is solid. And the acting is just top. Everybody in the film is great. And they're all characters. You know, there's nobody in the film who's, you know, who's not a character in a way. And it's Jodie Foster at her, you know, best conceivably.
Doing her Jodie Fostering.
Yeah. You know, it's the one time she's had chemistry with another actor on screen. You know, well, one time after the age of 14.
Yeah. Let's try that again. Ugh.
Yeah. But, you know, because I always think of her and Matthew McConaughey in Contact, and I went, wow, they had nothing going on there, and they were supposed to have a ton.
She doesn't emote very well.
She's not a bad actress. It's just she doesn't, there's nothing overtly sexual about her. And that's okay. It's just different than how women are portrayed in film most of the time. And so for this film, it kind of works because, you know, she's supposed to develop a bizarre sexual relationship with Lecter in a way. You know, they share an intimacy that is unique, and because he's so good at sort of delving into her and she's so desperate to get the information out of him. And they do form, like, you know, that's why, you know, you're never concerned that he's going to hurt her, which is amazing because he hurts a lot of other people in the film. But you never have that concern about her. So, all right, there's that one. Godfather, Jaws, Raiders, Silence, The Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, The Shawshank Redemption.
That's an okay movie, I guess.
Yeah, it's all right. You know.
It's all right. I don't know.
And like that's the one where I'm like, this is going to be a hard one to get somebody else to sit down and go, all right, it's a three-hour prison movie that takes place over 19 years. Sort of.
Yeah, that's what you guys told me when you made me watch. It's snowing outside. Sit your ass down. We're watching this. I was like, all right.
And then it's good, and the ending is great, and everyone is, you know, look, there's a lot of prison TV shows coming out now. And I feel that's a mistake because prison shows are really hard to do because they're about, the whole point about being in prison is that you don't want to be there. Like, I watched the first season of Orange is the New Black and I was like, oh, yeah, this is really good. And it was interesting and the characters were great and they got all these, the way they told their stories in flashback was really cool. But then at the end of the series, she's still in jail.
Right.
And A, I knew the real the character in reality, the person whose story this is based on, got out of jail in a year. That was it. Mm-hmm. And this is like it's perpetual because if she leaves the prison, the show ends, which is I think also wrong. You can use this character as an entry point, and then she can leave, and the other characters can develop independent of her. But they kept her in, and it's sort of this perpetual. She's never going to get out of jail because if she does, the show ends. But in a movie, it works a lot better. And I think of all the prison movies there is, this is, you know, one of the best ones. And just, so just that bit at the end when he throws the rock at the poster and it goes through and then he pulls it off.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought it was long as hell.
Yeah.
Because, like, they set it up that he escapes. And spoiler alert, everyone, the guy gets out. and you're sort of waiting for that.
Well, do they set it up, though?
Yeah.
I disagree entirely. I don't think you have any idea what's going to happen. But that's how I watch movies. I don't sit there and go, okay, what might happen at the end of this movie? I'm totally like, I zone out and I just let it happen.
Yeah, no, I don't either. But, I mean, first of all, the movie's called The Shawshank Redemption, and they're constantly hinting that he's not escaping, but he's not going to be there forever because they're constantly pounding it into your head that he is, and they're also constantly pounding it in that he's smart and he does a lot of things that don't gel with everyone else. He's not concerned that he's going to be there forever. Everybody else is completely given up, you know?
Yeah,
everyone has accepted that they will be part of this prison for the rest of their lives. Even Morgan Freeman until the very end. And it's not until, and he's never like that. No matter what happens, he's always like, "Yeah, I know, whatever. It's crappy. I know it's tough, huh?"
Right, but that they also talk about how that can be attributed to his personality in general. How he appears. I mean, what we would classify now as somebody having like Asperger's or some kind of like. Developmental
that way.
And emotional. Well, no, of course not. But like,
I mean, that's reading a lot into him. That's not really
Sure, but it was his personality that distinguished him. And yeah, he didn't seem as worried. And I guess looking back on it, I go, oh yeah, I guess he never really seemed that, you know. But maybe that was his way of coping. I mean, it was open-ended, I felt. Like, it could have gone one way or the other.
Yeah, but then there's also the expectation as an audience person in that they're not going to make me watch this guy for 2.5 hours and nothing's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
Something's going to happen here. I mean, like you said, you got to the end of Orange is the New Black and nothing happened. She stayed in prison and, like, didn't you feel like, what the fuck?
In that case, no, because there was never any indication she was going to leave. There was never any build up to. It was always like, this is going to go on for a while. And I wasn't surprised when she didn't finish out her term and then get out. But I kind of went, nothing more interesting is going to happen than this. Fine. Like, I got to the end of it. Everyone was talking about it. It was a big deal. And we kind of moved past it, and because it ended, you know, not in a way that would ever make you think she was leaving. It ended in a way that she's definitely staying.
Like, so, like, he, when he's in the prison, he's so different, and he gets built up. He gets the library going. He does personal work for the ward and all this stuff. So you knew something was going to happen. Everybody else is exactly the same through the whole movie, and it's not until he leaves that Morgan Freeman has that epiphany where he's like, you know, whatever. And then they let him go.
Right.
You know, like, even Morgan Freeman sort of gives up to the whole movie. He's the king of the prison. And then at the end, when his best friend gets out, escapes, he kind of realizes, like, look, I could get out of here if you just let me. I'm not going to change any more than I already have. And they let him go.
Yeah.
And that's the big redemption.
Yeah. I mean, and I think also,
it's a good movie. I just was not, like, wowed by it.
Yeah, and I guess for me, like, I don't know if I don't do this in general, or if I don't do it now, or if I didn't do it back when I first saw it, is to be as critical as you and saying, like, you know, you look at it through a certain lens to say, like, they're not going to show me a 2.5 hour, 3 hour movie, and then the guy kills himself in his cell. Like, right. That would be really shitty.
That would be new, but I'd be like, what?
Yeah, so they're not going to do that. But at the same time, you know, I don't know. I never was thinking about, I didn't think 10 steps ahead. I do now a little bit more, usually with a bad movie. Like, I tend to do that more with bad movies. If the movie is good, then I'm more immersed and I'm not paying any attention to what is supposed to be happening to make sure the audience stays engaged and sympathetic with your characters.
Like it's still a good movie in that, like, when you're engrossed in it and he's doing all of that stuff, you find out at the end, you don't notice it. It's very subtle. Like, he's doing the books. He's also cooking them. And he explains, I made up this person so I can have an extra account. And the guy's not real, but blah, blah, blah. And you realize, like, that is an enormous plot point he's explaining to you.
Yeah.
And it just sounds like nonsense. So, like, it's a good movie. I didn't notice, like, the intricate details, but
yeah, I mean, those things are sort of woven in such a way that if you really were, and that's how my wife watches movies, too.
She's right, trying, I'm not watching it like a puzzle.
Right.
But as an audience person, I'm like, well, something has to happen, right?
Well, I think you do watch it like a puzzle accidentally, whereas my wife will watch it deliberately and go, okay, what can I figure out before it happens? I don't know why she does it. I tell her not to, because it ruins a lot of movies if you try and do that. Mm-hmm. But I have a habit of deliberately doing the opposite, you know, just to say, okay, and I just sort of let it happen. And I tend to enjoy movies that have surprise endings. Like, one of the films that's not on this list that I just realized is The Usual Suspects.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, but
and I'm comfortable leaving it off because I don't know that I can. The whole film hinges on the last 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's all about a bait and switch.
And it's really good. Like, the movie before that is still engaging and it's suspenseful and entertaining, and, you know, as Kevin Pollak put it, even Stephen Baldwin is good in this movie. That's how good a movie this is.
Yeah. The only problem with that movie is that's not a switch you can see coming, because you're, like, in The Shawshank Redemption, they mention everything about, and you're like, oh, if you figured it out, you realize what he's done. In The Usual Suspects, Kevin Spacey is making it up as he goes along, and he's looking at everything on that board. Right. You can't see that board. No. You don't realize what he's doing. And so his story is just full of holes. So when Chaz Palminteri figures it out at the end, and you go, oh, look at that. The only thing that really surprises you as the viewer is that Kevin Spacey's the bad guy.
Right.
Not so much how we figured it out. Like, you can't follow along and figure it out.
Which is why when CJ said, oh, I knew that the whole time, I'm thinking there's no way that you knew that the whole time.
Only if you expect, like, well, maybe the guy they're interrogating is the bad guy. It's like a guess. Like, you can't figure it out on your own, really.
It's a shot in the dark.
Yeah, that's really what it is.
And it worked especially well because of the physical deformity that he was portraying. The guy had cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
You know, and then he stands up and walks. And what's funny is, like, when he leaves the police station and he assumes his normal posture, he takes his hand and he goes like that with his hand. Mm. In real life, Kevin Spacey had his fingers glued together.
Yeah, it looked like it hurt him. Like, he really flexed it really well.
Because he said, like, I didn't want to have to think about it. I wanted it to be there naturally, because that's how people who have this particular condition are. They, very comfortably move around with their arms and their fingers the way that they are. So when he moves his hands, it kind of, it looks like it's paining him a little bit. Mm. But, so that one I left off because, you're right. There's no way to, you get sort of less enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, it's just like a twist. Like,
which is why the movie ends. I mean, it's smart. The movie ends at that point. You find out, and then the film ends. With
Shawshank, and you can walk out of the theater going, oh, what did I really see? Dum, dum, dum.
Yeah, you begin to question everything you just saw and what was real. And that's fine. It's fun. But it's not the same thing as in Shawshank, where you find out, and then there's still another 20 minutes of the film.
Yeah, no.
Because it's really about Red.
Yeah, it's about not just that he gets out of the prison, which is what makes that better than the average prison movie, and that him getting out is important, but it's not the only thing that's important.
Right.
You know, which makes it better than, like, Prison Break from Fox.
Exactly.
Or The Great Escape or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is also a good movie, but...
It makes it more like The Count of Monte Cristo, which was referenced in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, so with that in mind, that's the kind of thing I mean when, like, this is going to transcend a couple more years, because it's not just about the prison. Hmm. So, all right, so that was five. I got to then A Few Good Men.
Oh, A Few Good Men is my favorites.
Yeah, that's sort of my B-side to this. It's just like, it's, really good movie, really good acting, really good writing. And kind of a B-side. Like, I don't know if that one's going to hold up quite so well. You know, courtroom drama.
Yeah,
Tom Cruise.
Know. It's still on all the time.
Yeah.
Not that that means anything, but...
And that's...
And Tom Cruise is great. All the acting, the actors are so good.
Everyone's good in this movie, you know? Mm-hmm. Demi Moore is pretty good, too. She's not my favorite. But I think Kevin Pollak is fantastic in this movie, too.
Oh, I don't have a single bad thing to say about it.
No, it's just... Yeah, so... But will it resonate? I don't know. I mean,
I don't know.
It kind of has... Like, the courtroom drama in and of itself sort of has a classic nature to it. You know, starting with, like, a few 12 Angry Men, mm-hmm. and, like, The Verdict and all these kind of courtroom things that kind of... You know, it's a theme. But really more in its location and structure than...
Yeah, they're very talky kind of things. Yeah. You like to sit and watch.
Yeah.
I mean, I love 12 Angry Men, but... I mean, that one's a little dated now.
Yeah, it seems like it.
You know, like, I really enjoy, but when I watch it, I'm like, this is not, it's clearly dated from a certain, first of all, they're only men.
Yeah.
You know, second of all, it clearly takes place at a certain time period where prejudices are rampant and stuff like that. And yeah, I don't know about that one. But A Few Good Men feels a little more timeless.
Yeah.
You know? It takes place during peacetime, but that could be any time.
Yeah, it's sort of, anyway. And the last one, so here's the thing. Star Trek First Contact is the last movie on this list for me.
Really?
It is.
Why? Explain yourself.
Well, so this was like the seventh slot that I had, and I was like, all right, my runners up, you know, the five films that could have filled this were First Contact, Serenity, Daniel Craig, Casino Royale, My Cousin Vinny, and Star Wars. And I didn't pick the Bond movie because it's going to be 100 more between now and when he's old enough to really watch Bond movies. So I can't say this is the one you have to watch because there's going to be 20 more of those. My Cousin Vinny was a tough one to drop because I didn't have a comedy. Mm-hmm. And all these films have things that are funny in them. Raiders is funny. Jaws is funny. But they're not comedies. And I kind of wanted to include a comedy. And I was like, I can't. Because it's still... It's just stuff we find funny. I don't know if he's going to find it as funny as us.
Yeah, I don't know if comedies hold up as transformative experiences like dramas do.
Yeah. Which is why no one likes the Shakespeare comedies as much as they enjoy the...
They just don't resonate as well.
I mean, the ones that do tend to be more about romance than comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So, but my first list... Star Wars has to be on here. You gotta have Star Wars on your list. And then I went, I can't do that anymore. Not with...
I didn't even want... No, not at all. It's well documented how I feel about Star Wars.
But. I mean... I love Star Wars. I think the first Star Wars movie is the best of the whole bunch, with, you know, Empire as an extraordinarily close second. Empire, I felt, was better made and had a better ending. But as far as the film itself, Star Wars is still the better movie. But by the time, you know, he gets there with it, it's Disney will have taken it and made it into something different. And then it's like with the James Bond. Like, I can't show you this because there's going to be so much of it in the way that to go this far back, it's going to be a little bit too much. Like, here's this old film that Dad wants me to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to hold up. And that's kind of sad in a way that, like, oh, this is not going to be as good as, or rather, it's not going to seem as good to everyone else because A, of technology, and B, just because there's just so much of it to sift through, that getting to this first one is going to seem like a real chore.
Here's the thing with it. I mean, I have that on there too. Not Star Wars. I have not Star Wars. And the thing with Star Wars is that...
I have not Star Wars on my list.
When you have three pretty good movies from the 70s and 80s, and then you have all that other garbage... What the problem that Disney now has is that they're trying to square those prequels into round holes. Okay, so what George Lucas did was screw his own thing up. You know, it's written poorly. It doesn't make any sense. It's not good or entertaining in any way. And they're trying to, like, fix it now with these new ones, but... All that stuff that happened in the middle doesn't make any sense. It doesn't gel right. It's terrible. So it's like, hey, Star Wars, the original ones are great. And you watch the other ones, and you're like, oh, wait, what is this? This isn't good. And there's no break for any kids now. Like, they all just exist as one.
Hmm.
And they, you know, you see kids at Disney with little Star Wars, and there's Vader on the street and part of the Christmas parade and blah, blah, blah. And you're like... These things don't mesh. They don't go right. You know, it's not good. It can't have any kind of cultural impact it used to have when it was just Star Wars.
Yeah.
And it was just The Empire Strikes Back and that kind of stuff. You know, even The Force Awakens, when you watch it now, you're like, ugh, there's so much fucking history to this. That's not just the internal story. It's also like, it's owned by Disney and it's on all my lunchboxes and blah, blah, blah. You know, Star Trek doesn't have nearly as much stuff like that.
Yeah.
So people are like, well, Star Wars, Star Trek has been around for 40, 50 years. Yeah, but, you know, it's not ubiquitous. It's not, you know, they don't have Star Trek lunchboxes and Star Trek tampons and, you know, it's just, it's different.
Yeah. There is a problem when something saturates a culture.
Yeah.
Star Trek has existed on... essentially the fringe, and, you know, it's still a pretty big fringe, as we learned. I mean, we saw all those people at the convention, you know, still, you know, from all walks of life and all professions and...
Yeah, but that was it. Those were the only people. It's not like there were a lot of people that couldn't get in and didn't.
Yeah, it's not. So. Yeah, no one was banging down the doors of the Javits Center to get in. Like, we saw a big line when we got there. We thought, oh, boy, we're in for a thing. And it actually wasn't as crowded as it appeared in the, you know, when we showed up. I mean,
yeah.
Again, it's a convention and not a single event. So, you know, access to it was structured differently, but... It's a relatively fringe thing. We still don't know anybody growing up who really liked it as much or in the fashion that we enjoyed Star Trek. But you can't throw a rock without hitting at least 10 Star Wars fanatics that are absolutely
And that's, I think, as kids get older now, they're just not going to have that same connection because it's just going to be. What do you like? Oh, I like the Clone Wars TV show. Well, I like the prequels. Well, you know, I like the holiday special or whatever. So.
And that's fine. But the more of it there is, it's like with anything. Anything with it, with economics, the more of it there is, the less of it is, and the more fractured it is.
Right. That's yeah.
You know, the less people can really find a central and unifying theme to it. Whereas Star Trek actually... For all of its missteps over the years, sort of, you know, they tried to maintain that. And for the most part, they succeeded. It didn't always make good television.
No.
But that sort of central, you know, focal point for it is, you know, is what kept all the fans together. It just didn't grow a whole lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you know, it was enough to keep the franchise going for a long time. But... You know, not enough to do what Disney has done with Star Wars, which is essentially to, you know, to water it down, unfortunately. So
what's your, what?
I was saying, so I put Star Trek First Contact on there because it's the best of those movies that's not a really talky movie like Star Trek VI was. And, you know, I would be curious to see what Frank thinks of Star Trek. He doesn't have to like it as much as I do. But it, to me, it's an entry point into the TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I was interested in trying to do, to say, watch this, see what you think of this. If you like this, I got a lot more of it that you can, you know, take a look at. It's, you know, because the thing is, it's hard to, as hard as this is to try to find movies that are going to be important to your kids, it's impossible to do that with TV.
Oh, yeah, no, you couldn't do this with TV.
And I just got to the point in the book by Chuck Klosterman where he talks about television. And he says, you know, the reason it's so hard is because what TV is now is not going to be what TV is later.
Right,
you know, the physical medium is going to be different. The way in which we access it is going to be... not even just like, you know, Netflix versus... network cable, but like, you know, we're all going to sit around and basically be watching things on headsets eventually. It's going to happen. Well, I'm not excited about it, but
you know, what's great about it, and we're sitting here talking about what'll be relevant, some things that we don't even realize might be relevant. I mean, like, how many of those, like we said, with those little kids at the Star Trek convention were finding Star Trek on their own on Netflix or something and falling in love with it? And you see that with kids. With, like, their parents' music, you know. They pick up a Grateful Dead album. It's like, who is this group? Oh, they're all dead now. But listen to this music. It's good. You know, it could happen. But that sort of thing is, it's easier to draw a personal connection to music and sometimes television.
It's also static, too. Like, the way in which you read books, the way in which you listen to music, you still have to do that a certain way. You have to put the sound into your ear somehow. With the film, too, you have to sit down there and watch it on a device that's separate from you, and books the same way. Even if you read it on an e-reader versus an actual paper book, you know, you're still, it's a static activity. But television is not. It's, you know, it's much more personal. It's much more, you know, an extension of yourself than but you know, both, you know, personally, you know, emotionally and eventually physically. You know, they were really trying to get those 3D TVs working for, and they did for a long time. They didn't take off because people were, you know, they didn't want to have to sit there and watch TV with glasses on when A, they need other glasses to see, or B, they don't want to wear glasses in their own living room.
Yeah, you ever try to get up and get a snack while you still have the glasses on? I had a coffee table once. My friend had a 3D TV. Like, I got up and I hit the coffee table. I'm like, that was dumb. And then I thought for a second, no, this is dumb. Like, it's not me. It's this entire concept. It's just so ridiculous.
But eventually that will morph. And so, like, they'll take what's dumb about that and replace it with something so beyond our comprehension at this point.
Yeah.
You know, but... And then I thought about that with Serenity too, and I'm like, Serenity is a better movie than First Contact. And I saw Serenity before I saw Firefly. Mm-hmm. But Serenity is a better movie than First Contact, really mostly because of the TV show. Like, it's not really a standalone movie. It does its best to be a standalone movie, and you know, Star Trek kind of does, but I don't know. I feel that the story is far more tight with First Contact than with Serenity. Serenity still draws on, you know, like, I remember not knowing what the hell was going on for half the time in Serenity.
And really?
Like, the basic story was very clear. You know, they found something in the girl that they've been carrying around. But the entire time, I felt like there was a lot of this that I'm missing. And there was, you know, Star Trek has the benefit of being able, in its structure, to give you a lot of exposition in a way that's natural to it. You know, Captain Flog, blah, blah, blah. And you get, you know, you can get all the backstory, and the characters can kind of come in their very sort of full sentence, stilted dialogue, give you all the, you know, this is what you should be thinking about this character now, Captain. You know, and fine. So that they have a way of doing that. Serenity, Joss Whedon didn't have a way of doing that. He still left a lot of things sort of vague. And unless you'd seen the TV show, you didn't get any of that. You got enough to keep you interested in what was going on. It was very compelling. And it was very scary, too, at points. It was very exciting. But I still felt like I was an outsider watching that movie. And it was, that's why when you said, oh, that was a TV show, you idiot, you should go get it, I was immediately spurred to run and go, you know, rent them or whatever I did with them, because I needed to know what the hell was going on. And, but that's just me, because I like sci-fi stuff. I don't know if he's going to like this kind of stuff, so I, you know, give him a one-off, like a very tightly self-contained kind of film, and see where it goes from there, rather than giving him like half of a story. Huh. That it's a very compelling half, but it's still half of a story. So that, but I struggle with that seventh one for a little while. So that's my seven: A Few Good Men, Godfather, Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Silence of the Lambs, Shawshank Redemption, and Star Trek First Contact.
Cool. Okay.
I feel like I've talked for 3 hours now. We should do this in part two. You've got 5 minutes to wow me.
Okay, so here's mine. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, we're done. Well, okay, so I don't have any kids, so
yeah,
I don't
know
what
my kids... You just got engaged, so it's not like it's out of the realm of possibility in the next 5 years.
Yeah. Yes, ideally I will have a kid at some point. And then we'll really have to be rehashing things for this podcast. So I have no idea what my kid would like. But if I had to force my kid to watch a movie with me, I'm looking at my list here. So I had Aladdin, the Disney movie. And I feel like every kid should see Disney at some point. I think it's impossible not to.
Yeah, but like, which is why I left it off. Like, it's going to be ample chance for this to happen.
So I read this a while back, and it made total sense to me. Aladdin is the first kids movie that's not just for kids. So when you go watch old kids movies, you want to claw your eyeballs out, because if you're an adult, there's nothing there for you. You're just like, oh, this is some kids movie. All right. Nice animation, I guess. And then Aladdin was the first one that had Robin Williams, a bright, unbelievable character doing jokes for adults that kids don't get. You know, kids don't get that Rodney Dangerfield reference. They get that he's making a funny voice with the tie, but they're going, what? Okay. And everyone, all the adults are giggling because he's doing no respect, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's doing all these impressions and visual gags. That was the first movie that ever really did that. Mm. They didn't do those things. I mean, Beauty and the Beast had a couple in it here and there, but not too many, not really.
That was really about the music, that yeah. That movie.
So then after that, you watch The Lion King, there's like 100 stupid jokes that Nathan Lane and his buddy get that you're like, oh my God, that's clearly for an adult, and all the Pixar movies and things like that. So there was this big shift after this. And I think that as a kid, you can really get it. And as an adult, you can watch it again and be like, this is as good as I remember it being.
Right.
You know, I mean, Robin Williams is such a personality that really helps. But if you're going to watch a Disney movie, and everyone does at some point, watch the best one. Don't watch Frozen. You know, like, I'm sure the kids will love Frozen for whatever reason. And the Snowman, I guess.
Yeah.
But that Disney Renaissance is full of great movies, and I was like having a hard time picking which one. Mm-hmm. And then I was just like, you know what? Just watch the early, the best ones: the Beauty and the Beast, the Aladdin,
Mermaid,
the Mermaid one,
the Mermaid,
even the Lion King.
Lion King's still good. Still Hamlet.
It's still, yeah, it's still good. I mean, I saw it so many times that I'm a little sick of it. But mm-hmm. Aladdin, I never get tired of Aladdin.
Yeah, we have a friend that works for Disney theatricals, and she reminded us this weekend that they're coming out with a Frozen Broadway show.
Oh yeah.
And I was just like, oh God, really?
I saw they changed directors and stuff already.
Yep.
Having trouble with it, I guess.
I guess so. That happens a lot. I may actually get to go see Lion King soon. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah. I feel like I should see that.
It's pretty inventive.
It's been around a long time.
It's been around a long time, and it's a staggeringly inventive. Speaking of directors, they had a hard time working with.
Right, that's what I'm picturing.
Yeah, that woman did not get along, but she's crazy, you know.
Yeah, but she made a great play, apparently.
Oh yeah, oh she's out of her mind, but yeah, that's genius doesn't linger too far behind insanity.
Yeah, really.
All right, so Aladdin number one.
Number two, I had Toy Story.
Ooh, two kids movies.
Two kids movies. Yeah, I love Toy Story.
Who doesn't?
There's a lot of adult jokes in that one. And I picked the first one because I think doesn't every kid have that thing where it's like, I'm going to rotate my toys so none of them feel left out?
Yeah.
Like, I feel all the Pixar movies, which are also classics, except for the last ones, every kid has a toy, even if it's just like, you know, a Transformer or a doll that doesn't really move. Or a cowboy doll. Like, every kid has that one toy that they just fall in love with all the time. And it's just such an eye-opening thing to change your perspective and see things from, like, the point of view of your toys. Plus Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
No, Toy Story is just a great... I used to watch it when I was sick, and I would just watch it over and over again.
Yeah, there's something, you know? Sort of... I mean, I don't want to say simple about it, but the more of them they made... Sort of the more complicated everything had to get to maintain a certain level of interest for the audience, which they understood was growing with the franchise. Mm. They kind of figured out, like, we can show this to any 5-year-old and they'll be fine with it. We need to, you know, show it to the kid who was five years ago and have it work. And the sort of the simplicity of the fact that all these toys know their toys except for this new toy.
Except for one.
And, yeah.
And it's great because they don't even give any explanation for that.
No.
You know, he just thinks he's a real space ranger.
Super serious about everything.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's such a good movie.
It is. And, like, that's another one. Like, you could watch it as an adult and be like, this is the greatest thing. It makes you feel like a kid.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't feel bad about liking it.
Although, I will say, going back and watching the animation, you just... It's amazing how we all thought that was so state of the art, and it was.
It was. At the time, it was like, wow, look at this. Computers can make movies?
But holy crap, does it look weird now?
I didn't know that.
And like, you kind of didn't notice it as, like, each one got better. You went, oh, yeah, it got better. Like, but you didn't know how much until you went back and went, oh.
Yeah, like, you watch them side by side, and you're just like, oh, in the third one, it looks like grass. And in the first one, it just looks like spiky green blocks that like grass from an airplane, I guess.
They couldn't even do liquid.
There was that there's no water in it.
There's that whole bit where like Woody's face goes like right into a bowl of Fruit Loops, and he comes up when the two Fruit Loops are on his eyes, but there's no milk.
Yeah,
because they couldn't do no milk. Yeah.
And like you just hear the bowl sloshing around. Yeah. I think it's great. So
quaint, almost.
Yeah, right. How quaint. I had The Godfather.
Yeah.
Enough said. Yeah. I mean, we're also Italian, so we could be like, see that? At least we didn't kill anybody. That's how I make my spaghetti sauce, though. I had Jurassic Park.
Ooh, nice one. Mm.
Jurassic Park is great.
Also, great, by the way, visually holds up completely.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's scary without being gory.
Again, a theme.
Like Jaws. Yeah. Like, I remember watching Jurassic Park. I was dying to see that movie. I think it was like 9 when it came out. I was like, you got to take me. You got to take me to see this. And they took us to see it. And I just sat there with my eyes, like in A Clockwork Orange, like taped open. Like, this is the most amazing fucking thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Where'd they get these dinosaurs? I didn't even totally understand what was going on. I just was like, there's dinosaurs. Oh my God, the dinosaurs got out.
That's like, bad.
They got to get away from there.
And what's funny now is when Frank, when he's having like a really whiny cry, he sounds like the infant velociraptor that comes out of the egg. So we call him the little baby dinosaur.
Yeah.
He's always funny.
I mean, it was just, I don't think my imagination had ever run that hard before, ever.
Yeah.
Because I was seeing it, you know? You're like, wow, this is so cool, and I can see it happening, which means I could do it, you know?
It's an exquisitely directed film, and it kind of doesn't get a lot of credit for being so well directed, but there's a tremendous amount of information that has to be given, a tremendous amount of character set up, and then you have to see all the action with all these dinosaurs in scenarios where, you know, visualizing them. It happens, most of the action happens at night.
Yeah.
So it's dark, and these things are big, and it also has to look like you lit it even though you didn't mean to light it. The power went out.
You know?
But you never look at it and you go, it's awfully dark in, you know, Costa Rica at night with no power on. How can I see all these dinosaurs? And like this, you never think about it at all because it's just so beautiful. Like the film is just, it looks great from minute one. And there's never, and I mean, people were really amazed with that because they were going to do that like a stop motion with figurines and things. And like the velociraptors at the end of the film were not CGI. They were big suits or something like that.
Yeah, like some were puppets and some were guys in suits.
Which was funny because when they did CGI velociraptors in the subsequent films, they looked terrible.
Yeah, they did look terrible.
I don't know what it was about it, but like they carried no weight in the frame. You know, like one of the scariest bits is when they come up to the door to the galley or like the kitchen.
Oh, and they and puff they, on the window?
They breathe? Oh my God, that's terrible. But like the CGI doesn't convey that at all.
No.
And yeah.
I remember they did that with Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire, where they were like, okay, he clearly can't do certain things, CGI. So they had just puppets, and they had guys with strings moving these mechanical arms like by his face, so they looked real. And that went the movie wasn't great, I don't think. But that went a huge way of making that look good, and like he looked great. I remember being like, they're never going to be able to pull that off. That's crazy. But it looked amazing.
It's a bit
just like the dinosaurs. Well,
yeah.
The dinosaurs, too, it's like Jaws. Like, first they said, like, we're making a monster movie where they're not really monsters, they're animals. And we treated them like animals, not like Godzilla. And second, you can't overdo the monsters or they're not scary. So, like, there's only, I think, 20 minutes of actual dinosaurs out of, like, 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, they don't overdo it. Yeah. Same with the shark. You know, like it's scary when they're walking through the jungle and they go, at any minute now, some enormous building-sized thing could eat me. Yeah. You know, that's scary.
But the more you see it, the less you're afraid of it.
Right.
It's like, I mean, you haven't seen Stranger Things yet, but that's one of the key aspects of that show that made it great, was that, like, they understood the balance of how much of the, you know, the scary thing to show you. Mm-hmm. And how much of it not to? Because your brain will fill in the gap with all kinds of nightmares.
Yeah, you can do a better job than that than they can.
Yeah.
So I had that. What else did I have? I had the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what it is?
I have far less of a personal connection to that those films.
There's also.
Do you have them as like one block, 1 9-hour block?
I do. If I had to pick one, I'd say the first one.
Yeah.
That's the most accessible.
I would give you that one. That's not cheating to me because it was really conceived of as a 9-hour film.
Yeah, I mean, it's better when you watch them all as one. There isn't any other fantasy that's any good.
No.
And they're like, it was a big deal when it came out. Like, this is what we're talking about. Like, there's a shelf life now. The Lord of the Rings was a huge deal when it came out. There was no fantasy. The best fantasy we had was Willow, which was horrible.
Yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden, the Return of the King is winning Oscar awards.
Only, see, and that's what bugged me about the Return of the King. It was the worst of those movies, but they just finally got around to it for, you know, political and economical reasons to say, okay, well, fine, here's some awards. And he, you know, Jackson made a nice speech at the end. He goes, "Thank you for honoring this particular genre," which I thought was a nice thing to say because he didn't. Because I don't know much about Peter Jackson, but it seems that he's not too ego-driven a person, or is careful enough to control his ego for a time. In that, like, when the film opens, it just lists the two production companies, and then says the title of the film. That's it. And at the end of the film, it says directed by Peter Jackson. But you know, his acceptance speech, you know, was thanking them not for honoring me or this film, but the whole genre. And that's a very telling statement.
I mean, when you want to work in that kind of genre and it never gets any credit or respect, and all of a sudden you're winning awards, it's like, thank you for noticing that you can also tell a great story in fantasy.
Yeah, there's more than one way to do this.
And they haven't done it again since. You know, I don't count all those, what do you call them? Like, they tried to do...
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe?
Yeah, all those Narnia ones, they stink. The Huntsman. I mean, all these rip-off fantasy things. Like, oh, this is as bad as people kept saying it was. Like,
there's not a lot of good... I mean, here's the thing. There's not a lot of good fantasy material to draw from, and Hollywood very rarely will take a risk. I mean, they're not going to take a risk on a genre that's, you know, generally a money-losing genre, and doing it with original material. You know, they'll find Camelot, or they'll find something, and they'll try to rehash that or recombine it and spit it out in something new. But, you know, it becomes a scapegoat for all the, you know, and that's 90% of, like, the more I read about Hollywood, the more the whole, like in these Star Trek books, they were talking about the movies, and they were saying that, like, we had all these other movies set up to do, but we were all, like, you know, ready to get the green light, and then the studio head got fired. And it didn't. That doesn't really affect anything, except for the fact that when a studio head gets fired, every single thing that's being developed gets put in the trash. It could be, you know, better than The Godfather, and it goes right into the trash because the new guy coming in had nothing to do with these movies. And if these movies are successes, then the people who hired the new guy are going to go, well, why would we fire the old guy? So that's why. And so everything's economics at the end of the day, which is unfortunate.
Okay, I had The Matrix.
I see, and I read that thing, and now I'm like, I can't put that on there. That's just not, it's not going to hold up.
The Matrix?
I don't think it's going to hold up at all.
Wow, I think it, I was watching some of it the other day, and it's still great. It's still a great movie.
Oh, it's still great, yeah, but I just, the fact that the two sequels that came after it were so terrible.
Yeah, but see, The Matrix is a great movie in that it's not ruined by them.
No, not necessarily.
Like, they're easy to forget.
But there's something about the character's access to technology which is going to feel not just old, but archaic.
That you think? People plugging things into their heads?
Not that bit, but everything leading up to it is going to seem so bizarrely outdated that once you get to the end, it's going to seem, well, you thought that we all had to talk on the phone with things you have to hold in your hand, Dad. You know. Then all of a sudden you jump to the future and everyone's plugging their brains into the machines. It's something about it, you know, its approach to the concept of the internet and connected machinery and artificial intelligence that will seem archaic, I think, in 15, 20 years. And it's not going to hold up the way that, you know, we thought it would. Not to mention the effects, even now to me, look a little bit dated. And still,
well, they were just, I mean, the bullet time camera was their big thing, and now it got done to death.
Yeah.
But that was pretty innovative at the time.
Oh, yeah, at the time. But that's sort of, you know, like, and believe me, no one has watched The Matrix more than me.
I know.
And I still think the story itself is fantastic. You know,
Well, that's what I mean. Like, it's to me, it's less about the technology and more of that, like, the big twist and that they're being enslaved and how do we get away? Because, like, it's the technology isn't as important as it looks. It's just sort of like an analogy for everything.
Yeah, and I would hope that would carry through. I just don't have a lot of confidence that it would. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, Klosterman mentions that film in his chapter about movies and how, like, we all think it's really important now. It changed the way we watch movies and the way that they're filmed and the way in which we understand reality. And it's a theme throughout sort of, like, you know, fringe and exciting versions of real physics. Like Brian Greene who's on The Big Bang Theory once. He's an actual astrophysicist, who's a big fan of the multi-worlds theory. And it was funny because Sheldon goes to make fun of him at a book signing, but so there's still a lot of this particular topic going on, you know, or rather being discussed, and so it's not like the idea of, you know, what we're living in is not really a thing. This is all computer simulation, and like these are all very, you know, highly posited, or rather widely posited ideas on certain, you know, in certain spheres within physics. However, I don't know. I don't.
That's looking too much into it. I look at it as a movie, and like we're like, well, the bullet time and this and that, whatever. The bullet time is a special effect, and it got done to death, and it didn't change the way I looked at movies. What it did do was, it changed my expectation of what I'm about to watch. And I compare it to Psycho. I'm going to watch The Matrix. Like, you remember, you were at the age when it came out.
Yeah.
There was nothing about machines enslaving people and being in this dystopian future. It wasn't anything like that.
Not since the 70s, but it was a different kind of feature.
No,
in the
70s. I mean the commercials.
Oh, you mean the advertisement for the film?
So you're sitting there like, oh, I'm going to go see The Matrix. I'm not quite sure what I'm watching.
Yeah.
And then you watch and you're like, wait a minute, what the hell am I watching right here? It's like Psycho. Like, I'm here to see Janet Leigh. Oh, I'm not here to see Janet Leigh. Then what the hell am I here for?
Yeah, that, I mean, it's,
you know? Well, strap in, sir. Here it comes.
It is breathtaking when your movie star heroine dies in the first 30 minutes of your movie.
Yeah, and you're watching too, and you're like, I think this is about Kung Fu, but I'm not really sure. And it's not really about Kung Fu.
Yeah, and I mean, accessing this movie is one of those highly dependent things. It's dependent upon a lot of things, mostly not knowing anything about it.
Yeah, but that's a lot of them.
Oh, it's
The Godfather. It's
actually, no. That's way too complicated a thing. There's no one giant twist where all of a sudden Michael Corleone is a cyborg. It isn't anything like that.
No,
you know, like, but it's like, you know,
the Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, Shawshank, Usual Suspects. Yeah. They all rely on a big twist. The Matrix twist comes in the first third of the movie,
right?
And so, like, the first act,
and that's what keeps you to your seat. Where you're just like, well, I thought this was something else, and now I have at least another hour.
But now
you're just sort of along for the ride.
But I wonder that experience that I specifically had. Seeing that movie, I wonder if that is repeatable when the film is like one that your dad sits you down to watch.
I think you got to get him in there and be like, watch this quick. You know, because it...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very situation dependent.
I mean, I think the one thing a kid would see is be like, why is that bullet time thing so special in this movie?
Yeah.
But that might be it. I mean, you know what's great about that is it makes sense in the context of that movie.
Bullet time?
Yeah. The idea was that certain people could go faster than they could normally go in the real world.
Right.
Because they're bending the laws of the computer. And when you, that's why when you watch the other two, they don't make any fucking sense.
No.
So like, okay, here's bullet time for no reason, just to slow the camera down. Everyone's doing kung fu, even though we all have guns. like the first movie, there's not that much kung fu until they run out of bullets. And then they just start to punch each other.
Yeah, for the most part.
You know, and then it's like, well, we're computer programs. What's the most efficient way to kill someone? Well, I could use kung fu.
Well, the idea was that you couldn't hit them with the bullets.
Right.
So the bullets were actually less effective than anything else.
Right, because they were dodging the bullets. Whoa. And then the second one, they just started doing kung fu immediately. Yeah. I'm like, they have guns. What are they doing?
You've all missed the point.
Why would they do that? So, all right. Anyway. And then... my last one, I actually had Serenity.
All right.
Because I didn't want a Star Wars. If I wanted to have a good sci-fi movie, watch Serenity. And I had it for the exact opposite reason you had, which was it stands up on its own and you don't have to explain too much.
No, you don't. I know. I didn't, but I didn't feel like I was missing any part of the movie Serenity while I was watching it. I just felt like, there seems like this is a deeper, more interesting thing than what I'm watching.
Yeah.
And that was sort of this burning thing in the back of my head.
Yeah, you don't know. And like, why are they speaking Chinese sometimes and stuff? Like, when I first saw it, I'm like, why are they doing that?
Yeah.
And it's not explained. It's explained in the TV show.
And the thing is, you can't explain it in the movie. So
you just leave it go.
I don't fault him for not doing that. You know, I just think, well, you can explain things in the Star Trek movie. So
you can, but Star Trek just works better as a TV show.
That's the, yeah, that was my thing. I was like, do I show this to him and say, well, there's a whole TV show about it, or do I show him this one and go, there's a whole TV show about it? Like, you know, you're doing it for the same reason.
Yeah, but it's not as important. Like, that stuff isn't as important to Serenity's story, I feel like. Like, when you're watching First Contact and it's all about him getting revenge on this enemy that's faceless zombies because they made him a faceless zombie at one point.
Yeah.
That is really important.
Yeah.
Like, and understanding that really helps. And that was done in the show. Why they speak Chinese isn't really that important. It's just a style choice that they did.
Yeah.
I mean, in the show, it was just an excuse for them to curse because they don't have to bleep it out.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the made-up word frack for Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Which I just started watching, by the way, which is really freaking good.
Yeah, it's Ronald D. Moore wrote that show.
I feel really stupid that it's been off the air for this long and I have never seen it. It's been almost 10 years.
Now you can binge watch it.
Yeah, I actually got Hulu for it. Mm. Yeah, I'm only paying the $9 a month, so I have to sit through commercials. But
the hell's wrong with you?
It saved me about $200 a year, so I figured, all right, that's worth it.
So I had Serenity.
Okay. Not argument there, you know, without a doubt.
Well, something. Hey, it's not Star Wars. And I remember it came out the same time Revenge of the Sith came out. And everyone was like, you should really go see this one. It's better. It's not Star Wars. And like, no one went and saw it.
Nope.
And it kind of got buried.
It made money, but...
it did okay.
Not a lot.
I mean, I didn't see it. I remember reading reviews for it, like a cowboy space movie. That sounds cool. And then like... I was in high school, so I really didn't get the chance to.
No.
So, well, yeah. We'll watch it on Netflix now.
So.
With your kids.
Yes, with your children.
So anyway, what seven would you people out there, if you have kids?
Yeah, or I mean. The
you can let us know.
Well, the fun thing about this is that you don't have to have kids to make this list. It's really just a list of movies that you would want to show other people.
Future generations.
Not even that, but just to say these are important films and you should see them. You know, and it doesn't have to be the best. Like there are things on here that, you know, I like more than these movies, but you know, the particular lens that I liked was just that stuff that I'm that is both entertaining and a little bit instructional, I guess.
Yeah.
So
not to be snobby about it.
Yeah, and it's personally instructional. Like there are a ton of really good movies that are not on this list.
Yeah, I mean, Seven is tough.
You know, Gone with the Wind and Casablanca and Die Hard and, you know.
Yeah, those are, people should see those. They're really
good. Those are really good movies. And just as instructional, you know. But.
Or if you just want a ripping good yarn. You know, I'm sure people are like, you guys are nerds about movies. Yeah, that's kind of our thing.
A little bit. But yeah, so if you all want to share what your seven favorite films to show future generations, this is a long hashtag, then tweet us or send us pictures on Instagram of these things or whatever you want to do. But you can do all those things if you go to @3DrinksInPod on Twitter, 3DrinksInPodcast on Instagram. Facebook speaks for itself. Just go to the search bar. And if you really wanted to suss us out, you can go to the website, www.3drinksinpodcast.com. And that,
yep,
that just about covers everything.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Awesome. All right. Guess we'll.
Anything else coming up we want to plug for ourselves?
No.
So we're trying to go see Sully, or I'm trying to go see Sully.
I saw it. It was good.
Sully. And,
it wasn't great.
And Stranger Things was great, and you should watch that, and then we can talk about Stranger Things.
How many episodes is that?
8.
And they're an hour?
Just under, I think, yeah, but about an hour.
I will try. Yeah. Luke Cage comes out.
Yes.
In a few days, and that is supposed to be very good.
Compared to The Wire, so I'm like, really? Yeah. The Wire?
Gotta watch The Wire. It's just not enough time, man.
The Wire is really important, and it's still underrated.
Like, it's not underrated. Everyone loves The Wire.
Everyone who's seen The Wire loves The Wire, but there are a ton of people. The Wire is a bit like Infinite Jest. Like, people are going to say it's the best book of all time, but they've never read it.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to get into The Wire. It's a hard show to watch.
Yeah.
We watched one episode, and I was like, I need a break, and I never went back.
Yeah, it is.
Not because I don't want to. But I have to pay attention, and I have to be emotionally drained afterwards. It's
a slow burn, that show, too. I mean, really slow. You know, the slowest Breaking Bad was ever been was like par for the course for The Wire, because it was
tough to do that.
It really is, but it ended up being so worth it. It was one of those first shows that I binge watched on like one of these. You know, it was HBO Go at the time, and you wouldn't think you'd binge watch a show like this, but we did, and it was. Yeah, it's worth it. Mm. So once you do that, we'll do a Wire podcast where we'll do that as like a, you know, better late than never.
Yeah, that's pretty late.
Both came to that one late, and eventually I'll finish Battlestar Galactica, and we can do that as the same topic.
Awesome.
Who's excited?
You in the back with your hand raised. You guys rock. Yeah.
Anything that's coming out film wise? I haven't really been paying attention, because this is like the we're getting into that like last ditch Oscar season type stuff.
Yeah, we're getting into real movies now.
Yeah, there's something I saw recently. I can't think of what it was. There's a new Ben Affleck, you know, assassin movie called The Accountant coming out. Who's jazzed for that one?
Oh yeah. I don't know. It looked kind of dumb.
Yeah. Yes, it did. So, but all right, everybody. As always, you should please drink responsibly.
Yes, do that.
Yes, indeed.
And don't really.
You don't have to. It's just a suggestion.
You don't have to.
They make us say that. So, I don't know who they are. But
the Surgeon General.
All right. All right, everybody. Take care. Adios.
Take care, everyone.